So you should know by now that when I approach the scriptures, the context is the most crucial question for me. Where does this passage sit within the life and the ministry of Jesus? Where does it sit within the gospel? That begins to answer the powerful sense of what this passage is about. It's not Jesus answering once and for all what should be the relationship between the state and the church. No. It's in the context of Jesus being placed on trial in the last few days of his life before he's finally arrested on this conspiracy by the Herodians and by the Pharisees as they group together. These two groups of people are not normally or naturally friends. The Herodians are those who believe that King Herod, even though he's only half Jewish, even though he's a puppet appointment by the Roman authorities, they believe that he's appropriately named to be the king of Israel. The Pharisees wouldn't accept that. The Pharisees believe and know that he was just this mere appointment, and they don't accept his leadership. They also don't accept that the Romans have proper authority over them. The Pharisees were the common people. They had various people in higher ranks, but mostly they were people like us, people who were just trying to do the right thing in season and out, people who were wanting to be faithful to the laws and commandments of the Lord. And so they weren't naturally to be associated with people that, like the Herodians, that were higher up in the social echelons, people that were associated with the powerful, the almighty ones that were in authority at the time. And so for the two of them to come together, it's already the sign that things are not the way that they're meant to be. These two people conspiring together in order to try and trap Jesus. So this is the context. This is the thing behind what Jesus is about to say. I mean, it's a wonderful scene. As they're there in the temple, and Jesus is aware that when they begin with these beautiful liquid words that are spoken to butter him up and tell him how wonderful he is. I mean, you always know that when someone comes to you and starts complimenting you and telling you how wonderful you are, you're like, hang on, there's got to be a trap here somewhere, that this is about to all unravel. And so Jesus knows that this is a trap that he's being put in. And it's a perfect kind of trap that he's being laid. If he says, no, it's not right to pay taxes to Caesar, well, Herodians are going to be upset because they accept and believe that it is a good thing. Of course, they can run off and report him to the Roman authorities. If he says, yes, you should pay your taxes to Caesar, well, the common people who have supported him and accepted him and got behind him, who don't think that this extra burden of tax, I mean, very few people like paying more tax, right? You know, not many people would volunteer to say, yeah, we want to pay much more tax. Thank you very much to whatever government is in power today. No one wants to pay more tax, so he would have got into trouble for that. But instead, this beautiful way that he answers this question, well, show me your coin, show me your money, show me the way that you pay this tax. I mean, already the person who hands over the coin should be in trouble because they're there in the temple area and you're not allowed to have any graven images of any faces, any people that aren't of the way of God. I mean, the Jewish people never attempted to have statues or images about God because they knew that that was too sacred and too holy. And so they had their own coins, and you were meant at the coin changers, once you entered the temple forecourt area, to hand over all of your Roman coins and get rid of all those blasphemous images and have the simple Jewish coins that didn't have any of these images. But the fact that one of these people is able to so quickly pull out one of these forbidden coins is an indication that they're not being faithful to the Lord. They're not keeping the commandments of God. And as he sees the coin, he's able to say so quickly, well, whose head is this? The Jerusalem Bible says whose name, but it really should say whose inscription, because it's about the things that are said on the coin that really gets the gall of the Jewish people up. Because the Roman coins at that time would have said Caesar Tiberius, August son of the August emperor. of the divine emperor, Augustus, high priest. All of this would have been considered absolutely blasphemous. For about the last century, each of the Roman Caesars had made that declaration, making that divine claim, calling themselves to be the Son of the living God, calling themselves and taking upon themselves so many of these attributes that the Jewish people understood were belonged to God alone. And yet they're able to continue to make these outrageous claims. And so Jesus, in holding up this coin with a graven image of a pagan god, no less, with this claim and this inscription about the powers and authority of the Roman Caesars, all of that was just utterly blasphemous, utterly unbelievable within the Jewish faith. And so in great disdain, he says, well, give back to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. But it's the second half of this that really continues to impact upon us. And to God, what belongs to God? Well, what belongs to God? What part of our lives are meant to be given back and given over to the Lord? Because the only answer that we can give is everything. That we have been created in the image and likeness of God. That all that we have belongs to God. All that we are is a gift from God. The very fact that I'm able to speak, the very fact that I'm able to breathe, the very fact that my brain sometimes actually functions in the way that I desire it to function, all of these things are gifts from the Lord. All of these things are signs of God's life and God's love and God's grace flowing in and through me. And so the call for us is to give back to God the things that are His. Give back to God every other element and aspect of our lives. The claim that Jesus makes upon our lives is absolutely extraordinary. The claim that Jesus makes upon our lives is that we have been created in His image and likeness, and we're meant to give ourselves and our lives over to Him. We're meant to offer ourselves in service of God. But this powerful call is meant to be lived in freedom, meant to be lived as a joy, meant to be lived in a way of simple worship of the God who has given us everything. And so it's a simple call today to recognize the presence of God, to recognize that He's already at work in our lives, in my life, and to say to God, thank You. Thank You for these gifts. Thank You for the precious love that You have poured upon me. And God is able to take any small thing and use it. As we heard in our first reading, when the prophet Isaiah talks about the incredible ministry of this pagan king, Cyrus. Cyrus was one of the Persian kings, but the Lord had used him. Even though Cyrus didn't know the Lord, even though he wasn't Jewish, even though he was a pagan, yet King Cyrus was able to be used by God to give glory and to bring freedom to the Jewish people who were trapped there in exile in Babylon. And so God continues to use all kinds of things, all manner of things for His greater glory. Even if we like to limit God to certain categories, even if we like to say to God, no, 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 you can't possibly work there. They're not Catholics. They're not the people that You have chosen. And yet God will say, no, I have made all things. I give glory to all things. All things are able to express My love and to experience My desire for them. So let's indeed have the eyes to recognize the sovereignty of God, the love of God that flows beyond all of the boundaries that we might like to set for Him. Let's indeed acknowledge that gift and give thanks today for all that we have received and return that to Him in worship during this Eucharist.